If God is good and God is all-powerful, then why is there evil in the world? That's one of the more vexing questions of Christian philosophy. We will address that question and answer it in this week's episode of the Faith by Reason podcast. Welcome to the podcast. The website behind it all, as always, is faithbyreason.net. There you will find the blog, this podcast, tons of information, and our social media. So we are still on the series of what's the point? What's the point of existence? What is the meaning of life? And in the last four podcasts, we've been going over creation, how existence came into existence. The first two of the four, we talked about the physics of creation and biblical creation. And in the last two, we talked about the opposition viewpoint, which is evolution. And that in the third podcast, we talked about the quote-unquote science of evolution. And I put science in quotes because evolution is not science by any stretch of the imagination, and went over that pretty thoroughly in that podcast. And in the last podcast, we looked at the philosophy that results from that fraudulent science of evolution. And it's a pretty morally bankrupt, and it results in man pretty much being dehumanized and reduced to nothing more than an accident. You know, it's interesting when you extrapolate how that works out. When you look at something like, say, the dating world, I am no longer in the dating world. I am happily married to a beautiful woman. I no longer date. I am glad to be out of that dating world, and I never want to be back in it again. But I have friends and acquaintances who are still in the dating world, most of them males. And when I talk to them about it, they tell me, you know, how easy it is these days to get a woman in bed. All you have to do is you know, use certain apps. I guess the prominent app is called Tinder. And the way it works, from what I've been told, I haven't used it myself, but apparently you upload your picture and profile into Tinder, and you turn it on, and it does a search of your immediate vicinity, and it finds other women or other people of the opposite sex who are in your vicinity. And if you see one you like, you click a button, I guess. And if she sees it and she likes the way you look, she clicks a button back to let you know, and I guess you guys go off and hook up someplace, and that's how it happens. And they tell me that it's easy, that, you know, if they want to have sex, they use Tinder, and they're basically having sex within half an hour. But the interesting thing about that, when I talk to them, they never seem that excited about it. They aren't like, oh man, it's so easy to have sex. They're really casual and nonchalant about it. They're like, yeah, you know, if I want to have sex, I have sex. To them, it's like, it's no more complicated than ordering a pizza. And there's no value involved. There's no value of human worth. I just know that when I was dating, you kind of had to work for it. You know, you had to be charming. You had to buy her dinner and talk to her and have a conversation. And I don't know, but now it's much easier. And I don't know if that's really a good thing. Actually, I know it's not a good thing because, again, you lose the value. I know when I was dating and I'd see a girl who I liked, who I thought was beautiful, and I knew she had other suitors, I knew, you know, I really have to do something to really get this girl to go out with me. I need to be really charming. I need to be funny. I need to do something to let her know that she's special, and to let her know that that I'd be a good person to go out with. And if she agreed to go out with me, I felt great about it. I felt valued because I knew that out of all the men who were pursuing her, she chose to go out with me. I felt valuable. And of course, she felt valuable as well because she knew that, hey, here's this guy who's willing to do all these things to get my attention and to get me to go out with him. So I felt valued, she felt valued, and it was a good thing. But in this whole world of Tinder and whatever these other apps are, that value really isn't there anymore. But if Darwinian philosophy is true, then why should we value each other? Why shouldn't we just act like the animals that we are, like the squirrels and the deer in the forest, and just hook up whenever we feel like it? I mean, one deer doesn't say to the other deer, hey, you want to go out and get something to eat? No, the deer says, I'm a male deer, you're a female deer, let's hook up, and once we're done, we can go our separate ways. You have no value, you have no soul. There is no afterlife. If you're a secularist or an atheist, heaven is the best you can do here on earth. It's just make your life here as good as you can. There's no hell, which means there's no justice for evil. If an evil person dies without being punished, well, hey, they got over on the system. And if a good person lives a good life and they're a sacrificial life, but they never get anything monetarily, they never have any real success, but they're just a good person, well, you know what? They're a sucker who spent their existence being good and got nothing in return because there's nothing. There's no purpose. It's a truly sad and hollow way to look at existence, and it almost makes me feel sorry for atheists because this is all they have. They've got nothing else except this sad world, and I would feel sorry for them, but every time I start, one of them opens their mouths and says something stupid, and then I don't feel sorry for them anymore. But fortunately, we know that evolution is nonsense. It's not scientific. It's idiotic. It's stupid. It's impossible. And we know that there is a creator. And we know that that creator created us with a purpose. He created everything with a purpose. But man is special. Man is different than all the other things that God created. Even different than the stars and the trees and the mountains and the animals. God made man unique. He made man in a specific way. And in this podcast, we're going to talk about why God made man the way he did, what was the purpose he made man for, and answering those questions will really get us closer to the final answer to the question of what's the point of existence. So let's just dive in. What is it that makes man special? Well, some would say it's man's ability to think. We all have the ability to think. Now, not all of us use that ability, but we all have the ability. However, some people also argue that animals have intelligence, that they can think and have some basic problem-solving skills. In fact, there are some biologists who say that dolphins have a higher mental capacity than human beings. Of course, that doesn't explain how dolphins keep getting caught in those tuna nets. I mean, if they're so bloody smart, why don't they just swim around the net? Well, then again, dolphins haven't made the Kardashians popular and famous, so that's kind of a point in the dolphins' favor. But I would argue that the thing that makes man special is that man has a will. There are two types of wills. There's free will and there's volitional will. Volitional will. I want to specify and differentiate between the two because there's actually a bit of a controversy on the blog, on the blog post where I talk about what makes man different. And I use free will, and I don't differentiate it between free will and volitional will. And I want to do that now. Volitional will is the ability to act within your nature. So if you have volitional will, then you can do anything as long as it's within your nature. And that's the will that man has, and that's the will that God has, and that's the will that Satan has. God and Satan and man can do anything within their will. God can do anything as long as it's always and completely right and just. However, man is unique in that man also has free will. Man is the only being in existence that has free will. And the definition of free will is the ability to act outside of your nature. So the question is, what is man's nature? Good question. There are two answers. The first answer is, what is your individual nature? And again, that's very personal to you. There are ways you can look into what your nature is. Your nature is your principles. Just like God's nature are his principles of always and completely right and just, you individually have your own principles that make up your nature. And I'm including a link in the show notes to a tool that will help you find out what you are. Nature is, what your principles are, and it's very worthwhile, very important to do because it will help you understand yourself better and your purpose in life better individually. As an aside, my principles are primarily analysis and sharing. I love analyzing things, as you can probably tell from listening to the podcast and reading the blog, and I also like sharing that. So those are the two things that really define my basic principles and the things that fulfill me and make me happy. And you should find out yours too. So please follow that link and do so. So those are just our specific nature. But in general, we have to say that man's nature in general is to be not always and completely right and just. And I don't think anyone would really argue against the fact that man is not always and completely right and just. All you have to do is look at your life, look at the lives of the people you know, look at politicians and lawyers and all the other people who are unrighteous and unjust. Man tends to be unrighteous and unjust, and I think that's pretty clear. However, being a being of free will means that man can act outside of his nature, and man can choose to be righteous and just. It's not our nature, but we can choose it. We can choose to act outside of our nature and be right and just. And that is really the only way we can really get to the purpose and meaning of life, which we're actually going to get into in the next episode. So it's important to note here, the controversy I mentioned earlier is when I say on the blog that God does not have free will. And hopefully now you understand what I mean by that. Because some people say that, what do you mean God doesn't have free will? God can do anything he wants. No, God cannot do anything he wants. God can only do what's always and completely right and just. God has volitional will. He does not have free will. God cannot act outside of his nature. God cannot be unjust, and God cannot be unrighteous. So anytime you say that God has free will, God can do anything he wants, well, you're basically saying that God can't exist because you're saying that he can be unrighteous and he can be unjust, which would mean he's not the first cause, which means he's not God. So God doesn't have free will. And I know that doesn't sound all that holy and righteous and biblical and Christianese, but it's true. God only has a volitional will. And so does Satan, by the way. Satan can't act outside of his nature. What is Satan's nature? Well, I think part of it is evil. I don't think anyone would argue with that. And it's, as far as the definition of evil, I get into that in a later podcast. But let's just say now that evil is just to be destructive. And that's one part of it, its nature. And the other part of his nature is that he's a liar. Jesus says pretty clearly that Satan is a liar, and he's the father of all lies. He's the source of lies. He was the first person to ever tell a lie. And we'll get into that when we talk about original sin a few podcasts from now. But he can't tell the truth. It's impossible for him to tell the truth. Jesus said the truth is not in him. Even when he confronted Jesus during the temptations in the Gospels, he said, if you're the Son of God, do X, Y, and Z, turn the stones to bread. He couldn't even say that since you're the Son of God, because that would be truth. And it's impossible for him to say truth. He could only say if you're the Son of God, because he can't be truthful, because he can't act outside of his nature. He doesn't have free will. He only has volitional will. Which is an explanation as to why, even though he can probably read the end of the Bible and the book of Revelation as well as we are, you have to wonder, okay, if Satan knows what his final fate is, why doesn't he do something different instead of just going down the path that will lead to his ultimate defeat in Revelation? Because he can't act outside of his nature. He is trapped by it. And in a sense, so is God. God cannot be unrighteous and unjust. So God has no free will. Man, on the other hand, does have free will. Man is unique in that aspect. But the question is, why would God make us this way? Why would God give us this quote-unquote ability to have free will? It's because it's part and parcel of God's purpose for man. God desires something from man. And you might say, wait a minute, why would God desire anything from anyone? He's God. He's complete. He's perfect. What could he possibly desire? Well, we're going to get into his ultimate desire in the next podcast. But for now, let's suffice it to say that what God wants from us, what he desires from us, is for us to love him. And again, I'll extrapolate on that and explain it in the next podcast. But right now, I think it's pretty clear from the Bible that God wants man to love him. So how can man love him? How did God have to create man in order for man to love him? Well, remember what love is. We talked about this in an earlier podcast and on the blog. Love is not an emotion. It's not a feeling. Love is a choice. Love is to choose to put someone ahead of yourself. So in order for God to position man in a way that he could choose to love him, he had to do a couple things. First of all, he had to create a being with a will that could choose to love him or not love him, but he had to create a being who had a nature that was not always and completely right and just. Why? Because if he created a being that was always completely right and just like him, well, that would be tough because he would have to create another God, which we're not going to get into the metaphysics behind that. But if man was always a completely right and just, then it wouldn't be really much of a choice, because the right choice is to love God. And if we were created with a tendency to love God, that wouldn't really be a fair choice. So he had to create us with a nature that was predisposed to us not wanting to choose him, to not want to be always and completely right and just, and he had to give us free will so that we could make an effort to choose him. So that it would actually cost us something, that we would have to be intentional about loving him. So if he created us with a tendency to love him, well, that wouldn't be right. That wouldn't be just. So he had to create us with that tendency not to love him, and then allow us the opportunity to choose to love him against our nature. And so he had to do that by giving us a choice, giving us choices that would allow us to either choose to love him or not to love him, and not interfere with that choice. And this is a big thing that I'm going to get into in a moment that's going to answer the question I posed at the beginning of this podcast. He had to not do anything to interrupt that choice. He had to make it a free and open choice. Otherwise, it would not be fair. It would not be just. And God can't do anything that's not fair and just. So that's why man is unique. That's why man has free will, because God had to give him the opportunity to choose him, to choose to love him, which means he had to give him the option to not choose to love him, to not choose to put God first, to not choose to be always a completely right and just, and to not follow God's way and to not do good. And this really gets to the crux of the answer to that question of why there's evil in the world. And it's really a simple answer. I think it's pretty self-evident. But I'll give you the answer anyway. The reason that there is evil in the world, and by the way, let me define what I mean by the evil in the world. I mean intentional evil, evil that is done with malicious thought. So I'm not talking about accidents of nature. I'm not talking about tornadoes and earthquakes or going on a hike and getting slapped around by a bear. Those are things that happen, and they are not good things. They're, you know, devastating things. And there's a reason for those too. And we're going to get to those in an upcoming podcast. If you want to get a preview of it, go to the blog post that's called Jonesing for Eden. jonesing, like J-O-N-E-S-I-N-G, jonesing for Eden, and that explains a bit of it. But right now I want to talk about the intentional evil that's done. And every evil act that's ever been done has been done by a man. The reason that there's evil in the world, you see that reason every morning when you look in the mirror to shave or brush your teeth or put on your makeup. You are the reason that there is evil in the world. Not just you, but I mean men in general. Every evil act that's ever been done to anyone on earth has been done by a man or woman, by a human being. Every murder has been done by a person. Every rape, every molestation, every theft, every bit of cheating, all the gossip, all the lies have all been done by people. People are the reason there is evil in the world. People have done all of the evil in the world. You're the reason why. And I think we all know that. That's pretty self-evident. But I think the real question is, why doesn't God stop the evil? Why does God allow the evil to happen? And I think the answer to that is pretty self-evident as well. I just went over it a couple minutes ago. God has to give man the unencumbered choice. He cannot interfere until man makes a choice, because if he doesn't do that, he's not being just. I will give you an example. Let's say that I decide I want to murder you. I want to kill you. You've done something to me or whatever, and I've decided that I'm going to kill you. At what point could God justly stop me from murdering you? Could it be when I decide I want to murder you? Can God stop me then, justly? No, not really. Why? Because I can change my mind. If I were to say, you know what, I want to murder you, and God smacks me around and judges me, I could say, hey, God, you know, I could have changed my mind, and I'd be right. God would be unjust to stop me. So what next? What if I decide I'm going to kill you with a gun, and I go to the store and I buy a gun? Can God stop me then? Nope, I can still change my mind. What about when I go get bullets? Can he stop me then? No, I can still change my mind. What about when I get the gun, load with bullets, and drive to your house? No, I can still change my mind. What about when I go into your house, I break down the door, and I point the gun at you when you're sitting on the couch? Nope, I can still change my mind. Okay, what about when I fire the gun? Surely at that point, once the bullet leaves the chamber, I've made my decision, and God should come down and slap the bullet out of the sky, right? Not really, because what if we lived in a world where we knew that every time we were going to commit an act and we put it into motion, God would stop it? Well, it wouldn't really be a choice. If I knew that every time I wanted to shoot you, God would knock the bullet out of the air, then I'm not really choosing to kill you. I may choose to scare you a little bit, but I know that you aren't really going to die, so it's not really a choice to kill you if I know that someone's going to stop me before it happens. No, the only way for me to make that choice without any interference would be for me to actually kill you. God can't judge me for murdering you until I murder you. Now, let me be clear. There are some examples, and there are plenty of times where God has intervened before something's happened. But that's really complex. It has to do with prayer, and it has to do with a lot of very specific reasons behind these individual times when God has intervened, because he's done it in the past. He'll do it in the future. But each one of those circumstances is specific. I want to get stay with the general idea. And generally speaking, God cannot stop you from committing an evil act until you do it. But what he does do after that, he will judge you afterwards. That's just to judge you afterwards. And by the way, that's what our entire legal justice system is based on. It's the system that we live under and approve of. The police can only arrest you for murder after you murder someone. If you call the police and say, hey, a guy down the street said he's going to kill me, well, the police can't arrest him for murder. Well, he can probably maybe arrest him for something else depending on the law, but he can't arrest him for murder. You're not a murderer until you murder someone. Only then can a police arrest you for murder after you murder someone. That's the system we live under, and we are okay with it. So why aren't we okay with it when God does it? I think one of the reasons is that, first of all, we'd like for him to stop it before it happens, sure. And secondly, we usually don't see the punishment for the person, because most of the punishment is going to happen in the afterlife. A lot of the time, and I use murder as an example, but there are all kinds of evil that are done. I mean, let's say you have someone who cheats. You have someone who swindles people out of money, and they may live a great life of riches and fortune cheating people, and they seem they go to their death never having been judged. And that's when we say, God, why didn't you do something about this guy? Well, God will. There will be judgment after everything is over, but we want it to happen immediately. We want to see it. We want to see the person who does these horrible, cruel, evil things immediately slapped around by God as soon as it, right after it happens. But we don't see that. We very, very rarely see that. I would say that the vast majority of judgment of what all the evil that we all do is going to happen after we die. But since we don't see it happen, and since we don't think much about the afterlife, and since a lot of people don't even believe there is an afterlife, we go through life believing that justice doesn't exist and that God is being unjust. So it takes a lot of faith. And here, I'm going to be honest with you. Even though I know this happens and this is the way that God works and that it's always a completely right and just, I still get frustrated personally. I see all kinds of evil happening. I've experienced all kinds of evil in my life. And sometimes I just want to say, God, why didn't you stop this? Or God, why don't you punish that person for what they just did to me or did to someone I loved or did to some innocent person? And I know they're going to get punished in the afterlife, but it's still frustrating to see them prosper or not get any type of retribution that I can see. And I have to trust and have faith that it's going to happen in the afterlife, but it's not easy. So again, just to summarize, the reason that there is evil in the world is because man does evil. The reason God allows it to happen is because he cannot, under most circumstances, stop you from doing something evil until you actually do it. But there will be a judgment, even though we don't see it. And you know, I think it's one of the biggest problems that the secularists and the unbelievers have with God is that they want him, we all want him to take care of the justice so that we can see it, so that we can be satisfied with it. And so, and then we say things like, you know, God, why don't you stop? Why don't you intervene? Why can't you be more powerful? But here's what I want you to think about. Think about how the world would be if God really did what you want him to do. And if you really think about it, you realize that's the last thing you want. Because when we say, why doesn't God stop evil? We think about the things we consider big evils. We think about murder. We think about genocides. We think about warfare. We think about the big things that are just really horrifying and that most people don't do. The average person doesn't murder as much as we may want to. The average person doesn't molest a child. The average person, you know, doesn't commit genocide. The average person does not get involved in sex trafficking. But if God is always and completely right and just, then he's not just right and just with the big bad stuff. He has to be right and just with everything, every evil. That includes the evils that you do that you don't think are a big deal, like lying and gossiping and maybe cheating and maybe theft. We all do those things. And what would the world be like? What would your world be like if every time you were about to do something evil, God stopped you? What about when your spouse or your significant other said, hey, you know, how do I look in this outfit? And you say, and you know they don't look good. And you're like, oh, you look okay. And God came down and smacked you every time that happened. What about every time you showed up to work late? Do you know that if you show up to work late, you're technically stealing from your boss because they paid you to be there at a certain time and you show up a little bit late? And what if every time you showed up late, God smacked you and then went to your boss and said, hey, you know what? So-and-so showed up late. You should dock their pay. You wouldn't like that. What if every time you gossip? What if every time you said, hey, you know what? I was out with a bar last night and I guess who I saw doing what to who? Smack. What if every time you cheated on your taxes? Smack. What if every time you got too much money and change after you bought something and you kept the change? Smack. What if every time you yelled at your kids? Smack. What if every time you had a lustful thought about someone who was not your spouse? Whack. What if every time you had a lustful thought about anyone and they didn't know about it? Smack. What if every time you lost your temper? Smack. Every time you thought about lying? Smack. You hear nothing around the world except constant smacking going on because God would have to judge us every single time we did something evil or even thought about doing something evil, and we would hate it. We would hate God, and we would say, God, why don't you leave me alone and let me do something, because I can't do anything without you coming down and whacking me around because you're always so completely right and just. So when we get right down to it, this world that we claim we want, where God comes down and judges evil and takes care of us and smacks us around every time anyone does something wrong, we would hate that world. We would feel oppressed by it, and we would feel that God was the oppressor. We wouldn't want it, and God doesn't do it. What God does do is save it all up, and for most of us, once we die, unless we have a provision that forgives us for our transgressions, and you know that we'll talk about that way down the road when we get to Jesus and forgiveness and all that. But for right now, let's just say that everything that we do wrong, it's saved up, and we're judged on it at the end of time. And we can either make a recompense for it here, or we can make a recompense for it in the afterlife. And that's another one of the reasons why God does most of his judging in the afterlife. Why? Because he gives you an opportunity, because he is right and just and fair and merciful. Mercifulness is one of the effects of him being right and just. He gives you mercy and allows you to make recompense. So let's say you did live most of your life from the time you were 20 to the time you were 50, cheating people and just doing underhanded deals. But you have the opportunity, let's say after you're 50 and you realize, oh my God, I've lived such a horrible life. I will live the rest of my life making restitution for it. I've been such a bad person. I've been unfair. I'm going to take my money and I'm going to give it to charity and I'm going to spend the rest of my life helping people. You have that opportunity and you can make recompense for what you've done wrong and do some right and balance the scales a little bit. If God judged you immediately, then you wouldn't have the chance to actually make it right. And that would be unjust. If you cheat on your spouse, that's a bad thing. If God judged you for that immediately and finally for it, you'd never have the chance to make things right, to make things right with your spouse and with your children. But God gives you the rest of your life, because he is merciful, he gives you the rest of your life to make those things right as much as possible, so you don't have to be judged for it in the afterlife. Because once the afterlife begins, once you're dead, there's no more making up for what you did in this life. So what God is doing by letting you live the rest of your life is giving you the opportunity through his mercy to make up for it, to equal out justice as much as you can for the rest of your life, so that you don't have to pay for it and don't have to get punished for it in the afterlife. And that is what a merciful and good God should do. And that's what our God does. And it's the right thing to do. It is the just thing to do. And we should be thankful for that, and be thankful that he does not put the hammer down on us every single time we do something evil, even though it would technically be just to do so. It wouldn't be merciful. And we would hate it, and we would hate him for it. And so God knows what he's doing, folks. And it's another reason that we should trust him. All right, so I think I'm going to wrap things up here. I think this was a pretty good podcast. I think we got into some pretty good stuff, and we answered that big question. So next time someone asks you if God is all good and all powerful, why does evil happen? Well, here's the answer. Just point them to this podcast, or just, you know, think about what I said and internalize it and explain it to them yourself. So now, in the next podcast, we are finally going to get to the end of this first session, this first section of podcast, and we are going to finally answer that question of what's the point? What's the point of existence? What's the meaning of life? We are going to talk about it next week. That's right. In 1 week, I will give you the meaning of life. It's going to be exciting. And it probably won't be exactly what you think, but it may actually be better. All right. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you listening. Please send your comments. Please subscribe to the blog. Subscribe to the podcast so you get the podcast every week when they come out. You get them right into your mailbox. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And again, leave your comments. I love to hear them. And until next time, I will talk to you next week.